are rich. They have rich resources, they have oil, and they don't work. They depend on foreign workers to work for them. But in Libya, I think it is quite the opposite, because people are not being paid. There is enslavement even happening to this day. At this point, understanding all this, we continued to become a sort of resistance for ourselves and to question the European agreements and their interference to the political struggles of the common people in the North African region. At this point, I think I would like to show you what this agreement means for people like me who had to go through this. I have several videos here. They are really brutal. And if some of you are not ready to witness it, so I will ask maybe to be outside for a little while. But I think also it is necessary not to look away from the things that is happening beyond our borders, because it helps us to start questioning what does it be to be in a democratic country? What does it mean for Europe to deal with foreign policies that is interfering to constantly put people on their knees and not to recognize them? So.
Raskol.
I think when I was talking about people being burnt by torture, this is a young man that I know, and he was being burnt by torture to extort money from his family. And these militias are people who are being financed by Italy to combat the what they call illegal immigration. In this sense, persons like me, we question, what did we do to deserve this? And it is what is happening in Libya, in Tunisia, in Morocco, and in these North African countries.
Même si vous allez vendre la cour de mon papa, pardonnez, vendez la cour de mon papa et envoyez-le les 2 millions pour qu'il puisse quitter ici. S'il vous plaît,
bonjour,
vous me faites pardon, vendez la cour de mon papa et envoyez-le les 2 millions pour qu'on puisse me libérer. Et d'ici un jour, pardon.
These are forms of torture which are being carried out, as I will constantly repeat myself. We have it in really, like, we can play it for 100 days and it will never end, because it is not about numbers. It is about individual people who go through this and they experience it on their body. And the way we want to tell it is really not easy. We search for words, because telling these things is also a challenge. To question, who are the people that you are addressing? Are you addressing the right people? Are you speaking to the politicians? But at a time where we show you these things, it is necessary that the common people also play a huge role in the policy making, in the change of powers when it comes to electoral campaigns, when people had to vote. I think this is what it is about, that people are informed about what these policies looks like beyond Europe. So when I talk about all these situations, I take you to a place like this in Morocco. It's not playing. What you see here is not from the 19th century. It is in this era, 2022, on the 24th of June last year, in Morocco, at the border between Spain and Morocco. People were caught in this brutal way, where several dozens of people died, and the people who were in this video, the reason why I brought it, were the same persons who were protesting with me during the struggle in 2021, and they went to Morocco because it's always a circle of movement where people try to look for possibility to get out of this limbo. They come to Libya, and if they don't find a chance in Libya, they go to Tunisia, from Tunisia, Algeria, from Algeria to Morocco. When this happened, The perpetrators have not been held accountable. It is only persons like me, the victims, who were immediately put into detention centers and they had to pay the price. It is the families of these people who pay the price of the traumas which they have to go through because of their lost ones. This is what has been happening for a number of years. And to take you back to Libya, I think when we talk about enslavement, which is still happening, this is what it looks like.
And we forced to work, and we're still working after her because, as you see, people are very weak, very sick, because it's the lack of food, and even sometimes some people may have a gap of secret. There's no secret, there's nothing. That's the situation. We are still asking the international communities, organizations, and the governments to help us and evacuate from where we are to a safe state.
So it will never be enough to show you, but when I talk about the hidden workforce to the Libyan economy, this is what I talk about. These are people who were detained in Anzara, and I know everyone in this video because they protested with me for 3 months, and they are mostly Sudanese because of their body physics. They are subject to enslavement. And since 2022, until a few months ago, that they were able to be released thanks to the advocacy that I will briefly talk about and the work that the Solidarity Network throughout Europe have been able to do. This is what they do. They build public facility for the Libyan authority and for private sectors, for different militias. And these have been well documented by the United Nations. And there was a last report by the Independent Fact-Finding Mission on Libya, which says that Libya has committed crimes against humanity with the complicity of EU fundings. The money that the European authority gives to Libya and to the militias, they have used it, and the resources, the weapons, the boats are being used to commit crimes against humanity of the Libyan people, the common people, the migrants and the refugees who live in these countries. So that being said, it is where we found the strength to continue denouncing, to be our own voice, to question everything that comes about us and to try to influence the policy making. Because if we don't influence it, if it is done without us, they will not truly be able to understand what it feels to leave home and for a person like me to have traveled all the way from South Sudan, not with any intention to risk my life again on the Mediterranean, but being subject to such circumstance where I became an illegal subject. Because the word illegal is what has killed a lot of people in the southern Mediterranean. We talk about the Mediterranean today since 2014, where more than 30,000 people have lost their life. We talk about 30,000 people, and these are individuals. If we put it, they could build up an entire society. So our struggle did not end there, because what I'm coming here with our advocacy, I think, has the self-organized movement. We have continued to go with the advocacy to seek, you know, the release of vulnerable women and minors in detention centers. And also we have been able to influence the Libyan authority during the protest. From 2021, I think for most of the period, all humanitarian flights coming and leaving Libya were all suspended. And with our process, we were able to sit and negotiate with them to resume these flights, because if they do not want us and there is a host community that is able to receive people, to mention a few mechanisms that have been used. I think Rwanda had an emergency transit mechanism where people were taken from Libya and put in these accommodation centers until their resettlement process are done to come to Geneva here, to the Netherlands, to Sweden, to Italy, to Germany. So there was these existing mechanisms, and it resumed thanks to our struggles and our advocacy. So at this point also we managed to push for more evacuations of people. Persons who were with us during the protests were able to see this gleam of hope, because they were evacuated to countries of safety, and today they are able to enjoy this little sense of human right, that the so-called human right that we talk about. But my being here in Europe, it's also another thing to talk about after I listen to your questions and answers. So I think these are just, I will not talk more about it. It's just the struggles that we have done here. Last year, we launched the campaign against the UNHCR, as I have told you. During our struggles, we were, for three consecutive months, the UNHCR was not there to listen to us. They were not telling the world what is happening in Libya. So after I arrived here, together with the Solidarity with Refugees in Libya, a network that was formed through different alliance, different civil society across Europe, we together came and launched a campaign which is unfair, the UN refusal agency, because they had refused to listen to us, they had refused to amplify our voices, they had refused to advocate for us. So we launched a campaign in Geneva. It was snowy, for the first time that I saw snow. So we came together, and it was where also we met some of these people in this room today. We met there, and it was a point of encouragement. It was a point of strength for people like me, that the common people start to get involved, because it is not necessary that you live through this experience in order to become a fighter, in order to denounce what is happening. So it is in this spirit that I am even speaking here today, that you can organize mobilizations as common people to question your authority, to understand democracy, what it feels to live here in Europe. And it is a point where we talk about solidarity. I think I have to talk about it, because even persons like me, as a refugee, we find every loss of life as a tragedy. This being said, that I have to talk about the war in Ukraine. When it started, I was in Libya. I was hiding from the militias. I was witnessing my sisters, my brothers, young children being put in such situations where they were being exploited, tortured, and being neglected from life. At this point, the war started, and there was a complete attention. Of course, we appreciated it, but we would have wanted the European people to also show this balanced solidarity. It is where we question the power of the common people. What is it that has not been good about us? We have been experiencing these war dynamics, I think, since our birth, and our parents even were born into these war dynamics, yet we do not see this kind of solidarity. It is today that we ask the common people here in Europe that whenever we are trying to play an act of solidarity, it should be balanced. We should look also to the common people, to the people coming from the southern part of the world, from the Mediterranean, and risking their life looking for this recognition. And the misconception in which migrants are being told that they are invaders, they are drug dealers. I think here in our society, even in Zurich, if we look at the criminal records, we will understand that the circumstance is pushing them to live in the street, to sell drugs in the street, to become this psychological war that they experience. I think it's really necessary for the common people like you to welcome these people in our dining tables, to dine with them, to listen to their stories, and to truly see if they are invaders or if they are just persons who are looking for this glimmer of hope where they can coexist in a non-violent society. This is what I could say, and I will give chance for questions, because I think question will help me to remember the things that I was not able to remember during this period. And yeah.
So thank you so much, David, for sharing all these stories and experiences. And I think you made it very clear that behind all the numbers that are always mentioned when talking about migration, there is always an individual story. And you also made the very strong point in showing the absence, the complete absence of recognition and of political will on the Libyan as well as the European side to change something. So thank you so much. And I think, yeah, if there are questions, please feel free. I can bring you the microphone, or you just... Ah, perfect.
Thank you very much, David. I wanted to just ask you for a follow-up about the UNHCR, because, I mean, we're in Switzerland, and as you mentioned, it was founded here The organization is based here as well. So I think one of the things that came through when you were speaking is the relationship between the UNHCR and the police. And that's because often in many different countries, also in Sudan as well, refugees become very desperate at one point from the situation that they face, and they do month-long sit-ins in front of the UNHCR. So this, for example, also happened in Sudan in 2020. And the result was, instead of being listened to, the UNHCR actually called the police on them, and the police forcibly evicted and removed them to the outskirts of the city, somewhere where there's no water, there's no services. The other issue is, if I'm not mistaken, in Libya, if you enter through, for example, if you're from Darfur and you enter through Sabha, you have to get all the way to Tripoli to be able to submit an application for asylum. And so, of course, that road, many, many things can happen to you, including being arrested and detained in the conditions that you showed us. I think my question to you is, in terms of particular solidarity, but also pressure, what do you think the people that are here in Switzerland, where the UNHCR has its headquarters, what should they be doing in terms of confronting the agency for the role that it plays? Thank you.
Okay. There are more questions? Otherwise, I will go for it and keep thinking about more questions. I think what you said is really valuable, because as I told you, that the UNHCR have been existing in Libya for at least 30 years, but without a clear structure. Libya has not signed the 1951 Refugee Convention, and it has not ratified this. And under this pretext, it is committing grave violations of refugee rights. And the UNHCR also is communicating its limitations in this sense, that they have limited mandate to operate in the country. And today in Libya, the UN claim that they have registered more than 44,000 asylum seekers and refugees within its database. And these people need protection, they need to be integrated into the society, they need to be included. But at the same time, they have only one headquarter. They have only one office in Tripoli, as you just mentioned. Now, with the raging war in Sudan, a huge number of vulnerable women and children have been arriving, and they have to cross thousands of kilometers in order to reach to Tripoli to ask for asylum. And once they ask for asylum, they are given this piece of paper which cannot give them anything. This piece of paper is not a recognition to the Libyan society, because they don't recognize the Geneva Convention.
Sorry.
So at this point, you find that people are constantly protesting in front of the UNHCR headquarters. As I speak now, there are at least 270 children and women in front of the UNHCR in Tripoli, who have just arrived from the conflict in Sudan. And it is a point where we are trying from our side here to, together with the common people, together with our with the civil realities, to influence the policy making of the UN. We try to understand their system. I have been several times to Geneva to try to understand the policies in which they are dealing with. But again, we understand that it has been hijacked by the European politicians, because UN is now acting as a border guard for Europe. They register people, even with the asylum process in Libya. It takes 10 years, 15 years to be recognized as a refugee. And before that, with asylum certificate, your child cannot go to school. Your child cannot move at all to move to another, from city to city, without being kidnapped, without being exposed to these violations that I just showed you. In this sense, I think there is so much that the common people here can do to try to understand, to try to denounce. Of course, the first step is to denounce that the UNHCR is not doing the right thing, and it is more about, you know, having awareness about what is happening by staying in places like this, trying to understand what is really happening from the people with lived experience who had to go through this. Because the UNHCR would never tell you really what is happening in these detention centers. Oftentimes, of course, the reality with the police, they call the police on us several times. And just a few days ago, they did the same, and they called police on vulnerable women in Tripoli, and it resulted in the death of two people. And this is constantly happening. For us also, it is difficult to understand what common people can do. If they constantly see themselves, the common people in Europe, they feel that they are not part of politics. I think this is really wrong, that politics, we are all politicians in the sense that we contribute with the power of our votes. I will give you an example of what happened in Italy when I had just arrived in Europe. There was an electoral campaign in Italy, and the outgoing Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, it was all about immigration. The migrants, they're coming to invade us, they're coming to do this, they're coming to take over our jobs. We will lose our European values. In this sense, people were really manipulated to give their votes to Giorgia Meloni with the hope that she can stop immigration. But the opposite has happened, because the deals, the agreement that she had made with Tunisia has made Tunisia a country that is not habitable, even for the Tunisian people. We have seen that there is a huge increase of people coming from Tunisia now, and they are arriving in Europe because these agreements are not aimed into identifying the primary causes which is happening in countries of origin. Why do people flee from Senegal? Why do people come from Eritrea? Because there is this dictatorship and this Eritrean regime which is known for conscripting every young population to join the army. We look at what has been happening in Somalia, the climate change, that is also another question. So I think it is necessary that people get to know these things. People try to question, and through this, they try to understand the existing structures of the UN system. Of course, it's we do not want to disband it, to tell them, no, you are banned, you can go, we will take over and do our best. We want to push them to do what they were initiated to do since the 1951 convention. I think this they have completely ignored, and they are just acting together with the Frontex, which is the border security of Europe. And these narratives are not being communicated to common people as we sit here in the room. I think people need to get to know these things and to try to know who are politicians. Politicians are our friends. They are the common people in our society. And the moment they sit on this podium, then they become something else. They come and tell us, and we believe that they know everything. They are not computerized. They are human beings like us, and we just need to push to influence them to be transparent about the policies that are made here, and then they have severe consequences in the outside surroundings. Thank you.
Maybe there is time for one more question, and then I think we would wrap it up. Okay, so maybe we stop here. If there is one.
Well, thank you very much for your talk. I just out of curiosity, I asked myself if in the town where you grew up, did you also there hear the narrative of the immigrants as the invader? Like, did you knew this image before, or did you only like knew it as being the immigrant? Because I feel it's very difficult, like, to somehow face this strong narrative, and it reaches many people.
I think talking back to the time when I was growing up, I think I was already an immigrant in my own country, that I was living under constant fear. I was not able to move freely from one city to the other. So I cannot lie, because we talk about also, you know, lack of infrastructures in my place where I come from. There are no good roads. There are lack of, mobile communications that people are using today. It's not industrialized as we see Switzerland. So we live in extreme rural places, which is underdeveloped. So it means that I didn't have any information about what it means to migrate to Europe or what it means to be rejected at borders. But once I was in Chad, I think in 2018, I already understood this, but has again, persons like me in these situations, it is very difficult for these policies, for these narrations, for these, deterrent information that are being spread out to decide and to dictate which kind of life that I should live. I think at this point it is why we understand that if law exists, it should exist because I am a human being, not a law that denies me, not a law that puts me on my knee and give me no recognition. It is why you try to find other ways to overcome it by using this irregular way of migrating, using smugglers, which have pushed more, existence of human traffickers. At this point, we just submit ourselves to the situation and we hope that, yes, at least there is this 1% of being able to make it to a place where you can be recognized, and then you go for it. It is where thousands of people lose their life while looking for this 1%. So no matter how hard it is, no matter how person experienced the situation, I'm telling you in the sense that I had tried to cross the Mediterranean and I witnessed someone die, 76 people who were just with me, within 5 minutes they were gone until to this day. But still for the second time again I tried because of this 1%, which means that these laws, they cannot stop people. People will always find ways to overcome it.
Okay, thank you so much, David. I think it was many things that we went through when you were talking to us for so long. And it was really nice. You could make it and you could come.
There's a fine light, baby, I'm on it.
There's a fine line between love and hate, you see. Can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. There's a fine line between love and hate, you see. Can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. Nigga think I see, and that's liberation, and baby, I want it. And can't worry about what another nigga think. Now that's liberation, and baby, I want it.
Let me hit
how many times I sit back and contemplate, a fresh off the thing when I'm telling my story. My relationship with my folks is give and take, and I done took so much, not giving my glory. To have a choice to be who you want to be is left up to me and my mama them told me.
Oh, Lord.
Das Laura wird 40.